Hello, welcome to Virtues, Values, Ethics and Morality. My name is Magda Pillay and I have here in the studio with me today Sister Denise. The format of today's show is one of Socratic dialogue, which means that I'll be putting questions to Sister Denise in order to elicit from her a universal understanding of the truth. The purpose of today's show is for you to look at your own set of values and ethics and morals and to ask yourself whether it is working for you, whether you should not discard it in favor of something that does work for you, and whether you act in accordance with your own conscience. We find that most people would like to do the right thing in any given situation, however, they still act against their conscience. So, Sister Denise, very warm welcome to today's show, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The topic that we chose for today is entitled very simply, Morality and Guilt. You've defined morality for us before, but could you tell us what the connection is between the two?
Well, morality, to define morality is to say that this is the prevailing social attitudes about what's right and wrong in any given society, which was determined by the ruling intelligentsia at some point in time and then handed down as a set of traditions. Guilt is something that you feel inside when you have done something wrong. And when you do something against your conscience, you feel guilty, and because it's part of the mechanism of conscience, it's how it lets you know that, hey, you just did something wrong. It produces that feeling which is called guilt. There are many people who say, I feel guilty when they don't do something wrong, because they feel that they might have gone against one of the traditions or some morality. So even if they didn't actually do something wrong, there is a thought that just to kind of cover themselves, because there are many aspects of right and wrong that conventional morality teaches people which don't have anything to do with something that is actually against your conscience, but it's against the social attitudes. And then you see society teaches people you should be selfless, don't be selfish. And so if a person does something for themselves, then they will say, well, I feel guilty for pursuing my career, or I feel guilty for getting an education, I feel guilty for replacing my worn out shoes. So in this case, the feeling of guilt has been kind of imposed, first of all internalized by an external moral authority which kind of forces it upon people, and then a person will go around doing something because from a conscience point of view it feels fine, but then from a prevailing social attitude point of view it's probably wrong. So then they train themselves to do something and feel guilty about it, and that makes it somehow okay, which is very confused moral reasoning.
Does guilt have a place in human functioning? Does it have a purpose?
Well, guilt has a big place in dysfunctional human functioning. But I personally feel that guilt as an experience, as an emotion, as a signal from within, only needs to be there for just a tiny amount of time, because if you're really going to follow your conscience, you're not going to do anything that will bite your conscience. Yeah, so this feeling of guilt is also like a feeling of your conscience biting. Now, if a person does something very wrong in the heat of some big emotion, anger, whatever, then they will have this feeling of guilt, which will stay with them for a long time, and it will consume them in a situation where a person is called before the law. They will be pronounced guilty. That means that they have done something that maybe they denied, and so they will be said, no, you are guilty of doing this, and then they have to go and serve time or get some other punishment because they are guilty. So being guilty and feeling guilty is kind of two different things.
Mm-hmm. So you say that guilt only has a purpose for a short space of time. What would you say to a scenario where somebody physically harms another, feels guilty, but then a day or 2 days later continues with his behavior? What's up with that?
I think the problem is with that the prevailing social ideas teach people that if you do something wrong and you feel guilty enough, it makes it okay. So that somebody can do something wrong, feel guilty for a couple of days, decide, well, that's guilty enough, and then I'm okay. Which is, again, very confused moral reasoning.
Okay, so guilt itself is not punishment?
Well, it's been made into something very strange and created a lot of confusion. Because, you see, the thing is, from my perspective, if you contemplate doing something wrong, your conscience will come in and say, you know what, this is wrong. And it will bring with it a little feeling to let you know that from the intellectual point of view, as well as from the feeling point of view, you better not do that, because that is not okay. Then you get it a little bit further. You do something because you didn't think about it properly, you didn't measure it, you didn't evaluate what you're doing from a perspective of, is this right or wrong? You say something and it hurts somebody, but you didn't intend it to hurt somebody, but you were careless and negligent. And if you had been attentive, you would have thought in advance that if you say this, it is going to hurt. Now, as soon as you say something, it hurts somebody, there's an atmosphere that lets you know that that person was hurt, even if they don't react, even if they don't say anything, but it goes in the atmosphere because they felt something and you can feel that they did. And then you'll immediately feel guilty when you feel that atmosphere. So then what do? You apologize. But it's too late because you were negligent, careless. So you'll remember, hey, this thing happened, I really felt guilty, I really better not do it again. One thing that I think is a problem is when people kind of indulge in feeling guilty. And they will do something not right, and they will start feeling guilty about it, and they'll activate these guilty feelings and go on and on and on about how guilty I am, which serves to permit them to do the wrong thing, provided they can, you know, make it known that they feel guilty enough, as if that is atoning for the problem, and it doesn't. It's an illusion. And so I feel that we should challenge that tradition.
Where does remorse fit into this picture?
Now that's different. Remorse is where you really feel bad about yourself because you did something and it will not let you go, and you actually experience inner suffering. So I think that remorse is a much more authentic and you can say correct suffering for doing something. But I also feel that, you know, it's healthy to put a time limit on such things, because what you want to do is make amends.
Is an act of contrition a form of making amends?
It can be, yes, definitely. But the difficulty is, I think, to try to find, okay, what can I do so that this bad thing that I did is really paid for. And there's a famous little story in the story of Gandhi, where someone goes to Gandhi and says, look, you know, during the fighting I took a baby of the opposite side and I smashed it against a wall, and I just feel really bad about this, and can you tell me what I can do to make amends for this? And Gandhi had told him, well, you adopt a child, an orphan from that community, and you make that child yours and you raise that child, and that will cancel out the crime that you did. And so I think that examples like that help people to figure out, you know, how you can make amends.
If somebody does something wrong in action, will words settle, can words settle the debt, or does it also have to be action? If
it really depends.
If you harm somebody through words, is a sincere verbal apology enough to settle that debt? Does words cancel out words? Does action cancel out action? Can words cancel out action?
I think we really have to go to case-by-case situation, because you may say something that is hurtful, but then it has all kinds of other ramification where you will have to do something, not just give an apology. It wouldn't be enough. But there is a feeling, I think a sense, inside human consciousness which is able to evaluate when the amends has been made and what would constitute the right thing, you see. There are people who will bear a grudge, you know, and it doesn't matter what anybody does,
they won't.
What is your
definition of bearing a grudge?
They just will not let go. They say, you did this, and I'm going to hold you, hold this against you no matter what and forever. And it can go for generation after generation, and this is very unhealthy, you know, because it's really a matter of you do something wrong, you go in debt to somebody. So that debt can be calculated in, you can say, monetary terms. You say, I harmed you to the extent of $500. So if I give you $500, that pays it, or I give you something that's the equivalent of $500, you know, because it may not be that you give a monetary form of amends, but what I'm trying to say is you can calculate it, because it's a debt. You know, if you do something very, very high, bad action, then that's very expensive. But I think that we need to find mechanisms that are really clearly articulated that will quantify the amount of that crime, so that the amends will be that amount. And if a person doesn't accept and they bear a grudge, then they will actually go into debt to the other person for whom they have they are trying to extract too much. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay. So everything comes down to a set of balanced scales?
Yes. This is why I think justice has the symbol of the scales.
Tell me, punishment, in terms of spiritual laws, does punishment have parameters?
Well, definitely. In terms of the laws of karma, if you do an action which is a negative action, you will pay the exact correct price for it. If you do an act of charity, you will get the exact correct return of that act of charity. So it's very, very much a calculation. It's the economics of human behavior, you can say.
The reason I asked that question is because we see in current day punishment, a lot of it goes towards the inhumane. And so much so that it could be it's actually excessive force that's used.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay? And not by an individual, but by a system.
Or by the state.
Yes, yes. So, spirituality speaks against that?
Well, spirituality will say, this is excessive, that means the state goes into debt against the individual, and they will have to pay sooner or later. Because the laws of karma are always operating, irrespective of how the justice system is applied.
Okay, so when it comes to the subject of morality and punishment, does everyone have their own barometer by which they measure, is what I'm about to do right or wrong?
I think that there are two things going on. One is that there is the actual laws of karma, which are actual calculations that are independent of human calculations. And what I think we want to try to do is make sure that our sensitivity corresponds with the calculations of the laws of karma, because then we'll not be in for any surprises. But if we don't calculate it correctly, or if we become excessive, and which is one of the problems I have with conventional morality, tends to be excessive, and it doesn't really, it's like you're not trying to find justice, you're trying to satisfy the public who's looking for revenge, and that is not a very intelligent way to go, because it's very primitive, it's very uncivilized to do things like that.
Okay, so if somebody wants to reset themselves internally, and they're at a crossroads in their lives as to should I, shouldn't I, how should one go about making a decision that will attract the least amount of punishment? I assume this is the direction in which one goes when one is spiritually enlightened. You want to live a life that attracts the least amount of negativity, the least amount of punishment. How do you actually get there?
I think that you don't really quite want to do that. What you want to do is to create your fortune. That means you want your action, your karma, with people, with God, with the earth, with your own body, etc., to be the very best possible. And so you want to make sure that you do not violate the laws of karma. And then there are situations where you come into ethical dilemmas. And there you have to take the least bad action, where whatever you do, you're going to, there's going to be some problem because of the nature of the situation. Somebody is going to be upset. So you have to calculate to do the minimum amount of harm. And I think that if we can activate our intuition for this and go for listening to the voice of conscience, following the voice of conscience, and really developing the inner moral authority, then when you have to make a judgment, and one of the powers of yoga is the power of good judgment, you will judge, take into consideration all the things, and in consideration of all the circumstances, attenuating circumstances and so on, this is the best course of action that I can calculate, and do that, you see. And if you really miscalculate it, there will be some return which will tell you go back to your calculation process and improve on it. But if you get the good outcome, then that will be a signal to you that you're on the right track.
Mm-hmm. In terms of one's own moral and ethical code, why is it that so few of us, when we're about to do anything, don't pause and look inside and ask ourselves the all-important question, is this, how is this going to affect me? Am I going to pay for this? Why is it that we go from, this person did this to me, so I will do this to them? immediately. There's no gap. There's no time to introspect. There's no wisdom that comes into the picture. Why is that?
Well, the culture is punitive, you know, and there are so many messages that encourage people to be that way. And so I think a spiritual education is important, because it's going to say, just pause and see, are you doing this thing in anger? Are you doing it out of fear? Are you doing it because of greed, revenge? Are you doing it because, you know, what is your motive for this, you know? And it's really the human weaknesses that cause human beings to take opportunities where they feel they can get away with hurting a person, but they will not get away with it.
So some punishment, how does punishment work? Is it, because for many people who appear to get away with an extremely serious offense against humanity, is punishment suspended?
Well, it can be put off, you know. But you see, the justice system, if it's working very well, is necessary in the structure of society because of the fact of crimes that do take place. But at the same time, you know, the mechanism of the laws of karma is going on, and you want to try and make them lined up with each other so that you're not going to get some surprises, you see, because the laws of karma, there's nothing you can do about them. They are absolutely blind, absolutely balanced. But you see, a human being can be merciful, can forgive, can say, okay, now, you know, I understand you have a whole life to lead. Now I want you to really think about what you're doing and have some education, have some, you know, therapy, whatever seems to be the thing that will help a person to get back to being normal. You see, rehabilitation is very good, but it's expensive, time-consuming, and most justice systems can't be bothered.
So how does one face punishment with dignity? Because we all get punished from time to time, don't we?
It has to be to do with your sense of self-honor and your sense of self-respect and your courage, you see, because punishment can be humiliating, usually is intended to be humiliating. Punishment can be very, very destructive of your whole life, you know. Sometimes it can be a financial punishment which will ruin the person. Sometimes it can be, you know, somebody gets their hands chopped off, then, you know, that's very extreme. Is it really going to cause the benefit that you want? I think that is what you have to look at, you see. But usually what society does or thinks or says in a general way is, you are a thief, you are a murderer, therefore we are free to treat you as badly as we want because you are a, etc. This is why I think it's not good to label people as their behavior. You know, I think it's better you are a person like everybody else and you did this and it's going to cost you because you did this. And sometimes I think it's quite good to discuss the punishment with the person. Yeah. Do you feel that this is right?
I've never heard that one before. And obviously, the recipient will want it as low as possible.
Not necessarily.
you're assuming that the recipient has a conscience.
Well, I'm very keen on awakening the conscience.
Okay, in that scenario, does one awaken the conscience?
If
somebody is punished, does it necessarily reawaken their conscience?
I don't think so.
Neither do I.
I think that to awaken a person's conscience, you have to get them to feel the enormity of what they've done. And there was a film that I saw once where a man had killed a deer, and the hero of this movie took that man's hand and put the hand on the wound of the deer, and there was some magical mystery around it, so that the man had a very, very powerful emotion to feel what he had done, and this was enough to make him decide not to carry on doing that. In Hindi we call this mesustaki shakti, the power to feel the extent of what you have done, you know. And this is the key and crucial thing.
Say that again, please. What?
The power to feel the enormity of what you've done, to feel, you know, because people who do those things are cut off from their feelings, otherwise they couldn't do it. Cut off from their conscience. So in Raj Yoga, this is something that is very much part of our training, to develop this thing called mesustaki shakti, to feel that how hurtful your words are or how hurtful your actions are. Because if you don't feel, it's like an empathy, if you don't feel what you're doing to the other person, then you're unable to operate on the basis of your own powers. But so that's why people need the external law enforcement agency, because that mesustaki shakti is missing.
Okay. Sister Denise, we've unfortunately come to the end of today's show. I hope you have enjoyed and found benefit from this insightful sharing. Sister Denise has said that even within spirituality, there is definitely a place for punishment according to the law of karma, but she asks that you look at your own moral code. And she also explained what one needs to do when one is faced with a decision as to how to act in future. And I think a spiritually enlightened person is somebody who takes care to attract as minimum punishment into their lives as possible. And Sister Denise also shared how one faces punishment from a past action that you're not even aware of with dignity. So thank you so much for your time today, and thank you at home for joining us. I hope the content of this program was some benefit to you, and I hope you'll be able to put it into your life, and in so doing become a better person. Thank you and good day.